The Money Show.
Small business.
Small business focus brought to you by Volkswagen Commercial Vehicles, built to build your business. Visit vwcommercial.co.za today. Pavlo Fatidis with Auric Business Accelerator. Tell me about the dinner you had this week, and I hope you picked up the tab.
Well, evidently I had to. No, Bruce, I had a frustrating dinner on Tuesday night with an entrepreneur who I've done work with, and we've followed his journey quite extensively. He's smart. He's educated, very educated. He's experienced. He's worked in big business. He's worked in smaller businesses. He's clever. He's clever, and smart and clever are different, because clever really is about taking the odd angle, a different approach, one that isn't obvious to everyone. And he's got all those talents. And what he had done is 4 years ago, he started a business, was involved in the retail space, and he put 4 million rand of his own money into it. It was a genuine, genuine startup. And we're at a stage now where in the conversation, he was telling me that he's going to be closing that business down.
No.
And I just could not reconcile all of this. He had all the trays. He had everything that was needed in order to make it happen and make it work. And it just was not happening for him at all. So we got into a conversation around, well, why was that so? And what emerged was quite scary, actually.
There are a couple of really lonely places to be in the world, and I suppose one of those places is being newly unemployed, with no choice in the matter. Another one is to be a new chief executive in a business, because beforehand you might have been on the exco, you had lots of mates, and then there was a bit of a race to see who'd be the CEO. And then they don't talk to you anymore because you got the job they didn't. The other one is to be an entrepreneur, goes in, puts their own money on the table and says, right, let's make this happen. It's got to be one of the loneliest places in the world.
It is. It is. Because to the extent that you go and do research, as this individual had done, to the extent that this individual built a business in the industry that he's been working in for the last 10, 12 years, so he had experience, he had insight into it. To the extent that you give it your best shot to plan, when you start that business, things just land up being very, very different. And the one thing that catches everybody off guard is that when you start, Bruce, you have to do everything, but everything. And a business is a complex beast. It has lungs and livers and hearts and spleens and kidneys. And all of those organs very successfully operate comfortably on their own. But when you have to be all those organs in that body, it becomes very hard to keep your eye on the bigger picture. In fact, it becomes very easy to get lost, irrespective as to how much planning you've done and irrespective as to how smart and clever you are. Getting lost is a consistent trait in the early stages, and in fact, most stages of a business career of the sole entrepreneur.
Okay, the sole entrepreneur. So what we're talking about tonight is partnerships, and it's about finding the right person, the right people even, to share a bit of that load.
Very much so. You know, if you look at studies, I don't need to look at studies. I just look at the entrepreneurs that I work with. By far, the majority of the entrepreneurs that are succeeding, are in partnership. They have gone and found someone that they either started the business with, or more importantly, are building that business with, because the average age of these businesses sits at around, let's say, 11 odd years. They're working in tandem. They're working in a partnership. They've been through the stages of getting to understand each other in that partnership, and they've really found their spaces and places as partners in terms of growing that business. And statistics will show you globally, in any event, that partnerships have a far higher chance of winning. Partnerships have an even greater chance of securing funding. And the reason for that is that, you know, if something happens to the one individual, there's still someone else to look after the funded money that's been into that business. So funders look actively at partnerships too.
Okay, so the old adage of two heads are better than one applies in this particular case.
Yeah, definitely. You know, here you are, you're sharing risk. You've got two sets of eyes on the ball. And the ball is the game that you're ultimately playing, because the easiest thing to to get wrong in a business, irrespective as to who you are, is focus. If you try and be everything to everyone, you'll end up being nothing to anyone. And building a successful business in such a competitive environment as we are today globally, you need to become an expert at serving a particular kind of customer. Okay. Losing sight of that is easy, Bruce.
How then do I choose my business partner? Because we understand the benefits of the right partnership, right? So, yes, it's good to be somebody's yin to your yang or your yang to your yin or whatever the case might be. But I've got my best mate from school. He's got some cash. We like each other. We get on. We play in the same sports teams. We like drinking together. We like having fun time together. We share a left and a right brain. It's magic.
It's magic. What was his name? What was his name? The guy who worked with Mark Zuckerberg, who was exactly in that situation. And look how that turned out. Not very successfully.
Okay. So how then do we choose that partner?
So it's not about people you necessarily like. So liking each other and you know, I was reading something the other day saying that a successful relationship is not about the happy moments together. It's about the difficult moments together. Because in the difficult moments together, that's where you learn about who you are and who that other person is in that relationship.
If it was
easy. When you're happy together, there's no stress, there's no pressure, there's no nothing.
But you've got to be able to gel in the difficult times. Otherwise, what's the point of having a partner? If it was easy, you could just do it yourself.
Very much so.
The reason you have the partner is because they've got to complement you in some way, and you've got to complement them in some kind of way, surely.
So, well, let's look at the big features around us. So the big issue is trust. You have to trust that person.
Implicitly.
And trust is absolutely, it's a non-negotiable. You know, talk is cheap, so check out this individual. And trust takes time to develop. And trust takes stress to develop.
But that's why so many people default to their mates and family members.
Boy, does that creates a whole set of other problems. It really, really does. You know, just because I always find it most peculiar. I might have a cousin who's really pretty useless, for example. And I will go into business with him or her because I trust them. And yet, Bruce, if it just so happened that you and I were cousins, why would it not be you? Well, I don't know you. You know, you're not my cousin. You're not family. And that notion, I don't think, is a strong enough notion to build a bond of trust.
So how do you find that person? It's about finding the person you can trust. But I mean, generally, a lot of quite successful small businesses start with people who've worked together, often in the corporate environment together, or they've been in the Stockveld together, or they've got some shared experience.
Yeah, they would have. So shared imagery is an important feature, but it also can lead to groupthink, and you need diversity in the way that you're going to be looking at a business. So I think one of the most valuable things you can do is, if you identify a partner, try and get to know them beyond just as an individual. In other words, if you can find an opportunity to meet with them or to meet with them socially, specifically within the context of their families, there's a lot of value in that. Because beyond trust, the next thing you have to be aligned on are values. And the values around money are important. The values around work ethic are important. Because where I see a lot of partnerships split up is where, for example, money gets made and one person wants to buy a Merc and the other person wants to invest back into the business instead. Where one person has got demands on them through their family life, wherein which they've got to put kids through school and the other individual does not have to. So the demand on money and the values around money are slightly different, or are slightly different from that point of view.
So it comes then as to how you enter that partnership. And I'll talk to Pablo about that in just a minute, because there's the old adage about samenwerking. And the best way to do work with somebody is to cooperate, isn't it? To werk saam, to work together. The former Reserve Bank registrar used to say he just hates joint ventures. He hates partnerships in that context, because in the idea of samenwerking, we're together. But both of us think the other one's doing the work. And that's the great problem about samenwerking. And that's the trouble in partnerships as well. You've really got to know who's thinking which way and who's going to do which job. But we'll talk about that with Pavlo Fetidis at Auric Business Accelerator in just a moment.
The Money Show.
Small Business.
Pablo Fatidis from Auric Business Accelerator is my guest tonight. You've got the partner. You agree broadly on the principles. You understand each other's work ethic. You then got to commit it to paper and structure that partnership with, I suppose, some flexibility, but also that everybody knows exactly where they stand when things go bad. And things will go bad from time to time, surely.
Yeah, they do. You know, a business is unpredictable and deals that were meant to happen don't happen. But there's a stage that I would follow first, because you now are speaking about marriage, and I would rather talk first about dating, Bruce, because you want to, before you get married, you're going to date someone. Preferably, you would date that person, unless you have no choice for whatever obscure reason. So you're going to date that person, and if you date that person and you create variety in that dating process, you're going to expect and experience different strains. So the way that you do it in business is, if I'm going into business with you and we've decided we've got complementary skills, not the same set of skills, we've got the right values, we trust each other, then let's embark on the startup, or let's embark on the business through a project. And in that project, you do your bit, I'll do my bit. The bits that we do will emulate the business model of the eventual business we aim to start together. And that way, I can see if you really are a good promoter, if that's going to be your area of responsibility. I can see how you approach it. I can see how you work with money in building activity around the project. And you'll be able to see if I can really deliver, if I can really organize, if I can project manage, if I'm on the delivery side. And we do it with a small project where we very much not at high risk. The second one might be a slightly bigger project. And the third one might be a project that says, should we hit a specific point in time in this project, we will then establish and incorporate this dating process into a Pty Limited, and we will become shareholders on some sort of basis. So date before you get married. It's a very, very good idea, because the divorces are extremely expensive.
Okay, so Levitt and Dubner, they wrote Freakonomics. They agreed on a handshake. And I think I've used this example before, but they agreed that there'd be a 60-40 split on the profits, and they both agreed to it. They walked out, and both were very happy with the deal, and only when it came to splitting the profits did they realize that each thought the other was getting 60. And that's kind of a nice, that was a handshake. But you've got to structure the partnership up front so everybody knows what they're in for and what they stand to get out.
Exactly. Put the paperwork down. And there are a couple of things that need to be in that paperwork. The first is going to be roles and responsibilities. Because, you know, talk is, it's a remarkable thing. You know, we've done it so many times before where we invite entrepreneurs to pitch their businesses on radio, and you throw forward and you talk about it on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And by the time Thursday comes, the phones ring like crazy, and everything that the entrepreneurs who do phone in were planning in their minds, as they voice them, they suddenly realize it doesn't make sense. So it's really effective and good to write down who will do what, why it matters, and who will be accountable for what. That's going to be the starting point of structuring the relationship. The next thing you need to worry about is what I refer to as delegation authorities. So how will the bank account work? And Bruce, in this business partnership together, do we have to co-release everything together? Or up to what degree can you co-release, and what degree can I co-release separately? And at what point do we have to both release and manage the investments that get made and the commercial contracts that we strike?
And ultimately, I'll take a quick call before I let you go, Pavlo, but ultimately, in order for us to sustain this partnership, we need to also revisit this agreement every 6 months, every year, every 2 years. How often?
You know, there are two things I think that matter to sustain a good relationship. You will work harder in a partnership than you ever will on your own, because you're working for somebody else, and you must see it that way. The second thing is, don't mess around with the numbers. Build a good back office right up front and be absolutely disciplined with the bookkeeping and accounting, so everything is constantly transparent to both of you.
Absolutely crucial. Pavlo, thank you for that. A quick call from you, Adam, in four ways. Your problem to Pavlo, please.
Hi, Pavlo.
How are you, Adam?
I'm very well, yourself, Pavlo.
Good question. Okay, let's go, Adam. Let's go. Problem.
Pablo, I'm having a huge problem with staying busy at the moment. I thought I'm owning a company that has a huge demand. I mean, we offer a service that is a big problem in South Africa at the moment, and we just can't seem to keep busy.
What's the service, Adam?
We do backup water systems, rain harvesting, specialized systems such as boreholes, borehole management. Okay. And we just cannot seem to keep busy. We're using all the platforms we can on social media, and we just cannot seem to keep busy.
So here's a clue, here's a hint. If you're in business because you're selling a product, I think you're going to struggle, irrespective of what the product is. Honestly, I think you're going to battle. Because business isn't about selling products. Business is about solving problems. And all of us have got different problems. There are people who are rich, there are people who are poor. There are small businesses, there are blue chip businesses. There are businesses in the mining industry, there are businesses in the hospitality industry. And the art of getting demand, the art of generating leads in a business, lies in your ability to interpret the problem you believe you can solve with your product or service and finding where that problem is at a peak. In other words, where it's a material enough problem for a decision to buy the product or service you're offering that solves that problem to be an easy decision.
Right. So how does Adam address this one in 30 seconds, Pavlo? Not to rush you.
Well, in 30 seconds, you've got to think about who your potential clients are. Honestly, it's going to sound trite, Adam, but please trust me with this. You've got to think about who your potential clients are. Find out if those clients are organized into groups. In other words, you segment your customers. And then go and ask them how severe their problem is that you believe you can solve through your product. And if you ask four or five different segments, you'll find the one which will be perceived as the lowest hanging fruit for you.
Pavlo Vatidis from Auric Business Accelerator. Adam, thank you very much for your call. I was talking to somebody who does photovoltaic panels on roofs to generate household electricity. The bottom's fallen out of that market because there's been no load shedding. The cost of electricity is going to keep rising. People will complain and bitch and scream about the cost of electricity. But the bottom's fallen out of that market because people don't perceive it as a problem anymore. So you've got to find a different way to address that particular problem. Maybe that's got some insight in there as well. Pavlo, thanks very much.